Welcome to the Nifty Podcast, presented by Party Fish Media, a showcase of the best emerging filmmakers under the age of 25 from all over the world. Film starts here at Nifty 2022 in Seattle, Washington. My name is Amy Williams. I am the director of programming for the festival this year, and I am here with a very special guest. Jacob, would you like to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about Half?
My name is Jacob Roberts. I wrote and directed Half, and it's a short film, a comedy, 10 minutes, 57 seconds with credits, credits included in that figure. And it is about a half-Jewish bisexual guy in New York City who comes out to his girlfriend, who he's been dating for 2.5-3 years. It's about how that affects their relationship. It's about how this guy sort of navigates his sexuality, his relationship with his sexuality, also a little bit his relationship with his religion and his Jewishness, and yeah, that's
perfect.
About it.
Great.
That's what it is.
10:57 is a really solid runtime for a short.
And that's why is that?
It's just really, it's a good sweet spot for a short film. Yeah, it's not too long, but you can cover a lot.
Yeah, and I think I wanted it to be, I was like, this is gonna be 10 minutes.
I love it. I love it. You nailed it. Let's just start off a little bit with kind of where the inspiration for this story specifically came from.
Absolutely. So it is autobiographical. So it's about me. I actually, the inspiration for writing the story was, I was talking to my cousin, who is a television writer and also runs a tango studio in Los Angeles, which everyone should go to. Oxygen Tango. That's where I dance tango as of October. I go like 4 times a week. I'm addicted. And I was talking to him. I was showing him. He's older than I am, so we weren't super, super close. But when I started writing and started making stuff, we got a lot closer. He started reading my stuff. The first two pilots that I wrote, he read both of them, and they were both wacky, broad, not about me, not grounded, blah, 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 blah. And he read them, and he said, cool, I like them, but why don't you write something, try writing something more personal. Maybe you won't like it, but give it a shot. This was in May 2020 that we had this conversation. I had just finished something and I said, okay, I'll start this because I have less free time. And I wrote it in a draft of a pilot in maybe 12 days or so. It was not good. It involved an eggplant farm in Lower Manhattan, which ended up getting cut out of the story. But the core of the story, despite the eggplant farm in Lower Manhattan, where an experimental dance piece was taking place, despite that, the core of the story was the core of this story. I don't know how, but... And I really then said, rewrote the pilot, got the eggplant crap out of there, and got it to a place where I was like, all right, I've got this pilot, which also called Half, also about Jewishness and sexuality and being bi, and I said, hey, I want to make this, but I don't want to make a pilot. And then I wrote the short, which took a while also. And which was much better than the pilot.
Incredible. Quite the process, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Both of those went through a lot of iterations.
Yes.
Evolved a lot.
Yes.
You both act in and direct this.
Yes.
What was that? Is this your first directorial project?
This feels like my
okay,
first
cool.
directorial project. I have directed one short narrative and one short documentary. And this.
Were you in either of the others?
No.
So tell me about doing both.
It was difficult. It was fun. It was scary. What I'll tell you about it is I couldn't have done it if I didn't have teammates that I really trusted. Mm-hmm. In particular, my director of photography, who I actually only met a week before we started shooting in person. And we really hadn't talked before then because he was very busy and he was doing me a favor by shooting this project. And we just became really close in that week leading up to production. And the trust was there instantly and the relationship was there instantly. And his name's Drew Levin. He's very talented. Everyone should hire him. And my producer, who I worked on the doc that I made with, David Shane, also very talented. Everyone should hire him. And they were that other set of eyes and that I knew, okay, the ship will not sink. Mm-hmm. I've got my people. Mm-hmm. I've got people I can trust. They're with me. It was a lot of, people always ask me, did you watch playback? Mm-hmm. Which for non-filmmakers, that's just a fancy way of saying, did you go and press a little button so you could see what you just shot after you cut? I did not watch playback on my own performance much at all. I was very involved in making sure before we started rolling that I liked the shot. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of my producer holding up the monitor and me trying to look with my eyes and not my head so I wouldn't mess up the composition. Yeah, it was a lot of, like I said, it was a challenge, but I relied a lot and lent a lot on my teammates.
For sure. Yeah, that makes sense. can you tell me a little bit about casting there's like three counterparts within this film.
Yeah.
Like your friend, your girlfriend, and your alt love interest.
Yeah.
Can you tell me kind of how you found all three of them and just what you were really looking for those roles?
Absolutely. I wrote this, and I knew when I wrote it who I wanted for pretty much all the characters. I knew in particular that I wanted Annabelle O'Hagan to play my girlfriend, Kate. Two people were friends from college, mm-hmm. Annabelle and Matt. And Annabelle is just a phenomenal actor, and also we've worked a little bit together in the past, never on camera, but in acting classes in college. And I knew that we had like really good chemistry and that she was hilarious. And before I babble on too much about how great these people are, just talk about the kind of the principle behind mm-hmm. the casting process was I want someone who going in I know I'll have to barely direct them mm-hmm. because I'm going to be acting mm-hmm. and I'll be able to direct them. It's actually fun to direct when you're acting because you don't have to come from behind the camera as this mm-hmm. figure descending upon
the scene. It feels
more
collaborative.
It's more collaborative. It's more you stop, you turn to the person, and you talk to them. Mm-hmm. But I wanted it to be people that I knew were gonna nail it mm-hmm. and that I was gonna have chemistry with and that we're gonna be open to trying stuff and to rolling with the punches of a low budget, tight schedule. And then that's how I found Matt and Annabelle they were friends. Mm-hmm. And then Ryan, who played Richie, the rabbi, I saw him with Matt in a production of a play called The Play That Goes Wrong off Broadway at New World Stages on 51st Street in New York. Hilarious play, super goofy play, but I saw his performance and then Matt sent me some stuff that he's done on camera and I said, this person's perfect. I don't have a personal relationship yet with this mm-hmm. person. Now I do. I don't have a personal relationship yet, but just by seeing all this, I know this person is going to be that kind of person. It's just going to mm-hmm. nail it.
For sure. This year, so Half starts with one of the greatest musical intros, I think. I think it's perfect. I'm just very curious. Was that in the script? Did you have that picked out? Or is that something that you found along the way?
I found that along the way.
Yeah.
I had in the script the song My Ideal as performed by Chet Baker, but which is a jazz standard, and I didn't end up using that. It actually would have been a terrible choice. Mm-hmm. It's much slower and much less funny. I just discovered this. I mean, man, I was just looking at public domain jazz standards. Not jazz standards, public domain. Really, I just looked at every song that came out before 1926. I found this one, and I was like, this is cool. I've never heard this before. I don't think anyone will have heard this before, almost, but it felt right. It's called Big Boy. It's by Milton and Ager, two people, and it felt right. I don't know why did it work for you?
I think it sets the scene very well, and it really introduces your character extremely well. You know what you're gonna get. You're doing a lot of physical comedy, and it's just this like musical intro with you jogging down the street, and it's the first intro to your character, and I get it. Yeah. I see you, and it's like, okay, this is what I'm in for. I'm into it.
Yeah.
And then the dog. And it's just beautiful.
And then the dog.
It expands from there.
Yeah.
I would kind of like to talk about, I have my own interpretation of the ending. And I want audiences to have their own interpretation
Absolutely.
Of the ending. But I am a little bit curious just how you got there. How is the decision he makes, his final decision, how did you decide that was the right ending?
Oh, yeah. I thought you meant the ending.
Oh, yeah, well.
That is a good question. I'm still not sure if it was the right ending.
Mm-hmm.
It feels right to me now seeing it with an audience, but it's sort of a tricky balance, and I feel boxed in a little bit by the fact that I'm trying to, like, my motivation for telling this story was, I think that representation of bi people on screen and in popular culture in general sucks. And I wanted to make something better that felt truer and felt true to my experience. At the same time, making that and making it good and making it like a good representation is tougher. It's tough because at the end of the day, you're showing someone, like if you're showing a love story with, you know, different romantic interests, and if you're, and it's a story about a, you know, a bi person, if the bi person ends up with, you know, one or the other of the, you know, the love interests, if they are of different genders or you know, whatever, there are some people who, based on sort of their preconceived notions and their assumptions, are still kind of locked into the mindset of, oh, if the last scene I see of this person is them being with a dude, then they're gay. Or, oh, if the last scene I see is them being with a woman, then they're straight. Or, like, they're still, like... So I'm frustrated by that, and I felt like navigating that felt like navigating a minefield. And then I was like, but I don't want to be boxed in the storytelling by what some people are, what, you know... So that was a balance, and I tried to offset and actively kind of counteract the way in which someone could come away with that thought of like, oh, you know, he's actually just gay, or oh, he's just confused, or, oh, it's a face. I don't know, anything that people, any of the, you know, BS that people might say. And I tried to do that in a couple ways. We'll see if it succeeded, but
I think well, with the ending, I think that there is a level of ambiguity there that I think really works, that I really enjoyed. And I think that there's something to be said for what, first of all, everything you just said, I completely get.
Yeah.
I think that's great. I assumed that was kind of your thought process going into this, and it is. It almost feels like taking a stance of some sort when you, as an artist, don't necessarily need, like, you're making a piece for an audience that, like, it's not you taking a stance on anything necessarily.
Right.
But I think that there's some other, like, morally, ethically ambiguous stuff going on with this guy, which is human, which is very normal, which I just really appreciated throughout this film, that very real depiction of truly just figuring shit out.
Yeah.
And just having to get through that and figure that out as a person, as a human that is capable of loving and hurting other people.
Yes.
So thank you. Thanks for trying your best there. I it makes me think a lot. Like, I think the first two acts is a fun comedy, and it's really fun to watch. And then you do force that character to kind of make that decision and figure that out in a very public way, which I think is very interesting. And I don't want to talk about how I perceive the ending, because I want audiences to be able to come up with their own ideas.
Absolutely.
But after all of that, so how have audiences been reacting?
Audiences. So this film premiered on April 21st. I don't want to date this podcast, but that's when the film premiered. And audiences have been reacting really. This was the first time I'd seen it at Nifty. Was the first time that I'd seen it in the room with audiences. The week before the Nifty screening, I went to Milwaukee for the Milwaukee Film Festival, which is a fantastic film festival. Everyone should submit to and donate to and go to, and I'm thankful to them for programming my film. I went there for kind of the opening, and I booked my tickets before they announced when films were, kind of thinking, like, I'm probably going to get boned on this one. and I was. So I missed both my screenings, which I heard from Jack Faria, who programmed my film, that they went so well and that it was like a rock concert. No, that is what he said, but I don't know how much stock I can put in that. It was very sweet. Audiences are reacting well, and at this festival alone, I've had five people come up to me and say, yo, man, like, or, hey, I'm a bisexual half Jewish person too, and I'm like, rad, I found my people. Actually, five people have come up to me and specifically said, I'm bi and half Jewish. I don't know, maybe it's just a Nifty thing, but there are a lot of bi half Jews out there, man. And I think I've had a lot of people watch it and then talk to me about their sexuality, their experiences, the extent to which they'd seen this represented on screen or not represented on screen before, or represented poorly on screen. That's probably the most rewarding part of talking to audiences about it for me.
Mm-hmm, for sure. You do pack a lot into the 10 minute and 57 second short film.
Including credits,
which is great. How did you find that balance between the religious aspect and the sexuality aspect?
Absolutely. So the religious aspect is... It's interesting because when most people think of a movie or anything about religion and sexuality, their mind probably immediately goes to the conflict between religion and sexuality, you know, a religion telling you that, you know, you can't love the person that you love, which is a very, and there, it's a very rich subject, that kind of realm of exploring religion and sexuality, and there are a lot of fantastic films that do explore that. And it's very much not what this movie is. Mm-hmm. So one thing that was tricky was it almost feels, the religion aspect and the fact that they're both happening at the same time, it almost feels incidental. They're kind of zigzagging across each other. So for me, it was, finding the balance was mostly just about trying to depict it as I'd experienced it in my life. And I think it's kind of fun because although I don't see my religion and my sexuality like impacting each other that directly, I've also found them overlapping at weird points. And when I was first like in the process of coming out as bi, I also had like a weird resurgence of my interest in my Judaism, and I don't know why. It was not in that case because I was, because I met a hot guy with a Star of David necklace, but I don't know why, but it was even to the point where I was considering, because I had had people tell me, as this character is told, you're not really Jewish because it's the wrong half. I was considering, right around the time that I was figuring all sorts of stuff out in terms of just like, you know, being able to, I mean, I knew I was bi, but being able to tell people that I was bi. Right around that time, I was considering going and officially converting to Judaism and going and doing the mikveh, the ritual, you know, bath, blah, blah, blah. Very glad that I didn't do that. Not because there's anything wrong with converting to Judaism, but because I shouldn't have to convert to Judaism because I'm already Jewish, at least to the extent that I want to be. And I don't really want to conform to the standards of people who would say that I'm not, because whatever. So I have found them intersect, even though they feel independent. And I think part of that's just about when you're searching, when you're nailing down or defining one part of your identity, there's this impulse to be able to make the other pieces of your identity fall into place.
Yeah, we're already out here searching for a sense of self. Yeah. You're like, might as well knock them all out at once, baby. Just what came first for you, acting or filmmaking?
Acting.
And what got you interested in being on the other side?
I started writing in college. I started writing mostly comedy stuff, and I wanted to tell funny stories, and I ended up finding that this was the best way for me to do that. And I think movies, film, it's also just like, it's such a seductive thing. Like you see it and you're like, I want to do that. And I never thought that I could, because I didn't start early. A lot of people start early and develop all these skills, and it's awesome. They're awesome, and it's intimidating. But you can work with those people who started early.
Yeah, you can learn a lot from them.
Absolutely.
You shot this in New York, right?
Yep.
It looked like there was a lot of like public shooting locations, a lot. Was it difficult?
Yeah, it was difficult. It was difficult. Noise was difficult. We very often got to places and there was just bang, bang, bang. Even in the mix, like, there are places where we're just struggling to, you know, just get out stuff that makes it so hard to cut.
Yeah.
That's something I came up against a lot. I did the edit for this film also, which was a real slog for many reasons. But so that was a challenge. No one ever tried to shut us down.
Nice.
We essentially wasted money on getting a permit that I effectively didn't need, which still great. The thing is that even though I got this permit, I didn't need the permit for most of the places that I was shooting, because the permit essentially was only needed if I had more equipment, more crew members, which I didn't have. So those places I was permitted and didn't need to be permitted. And then we ended up shooting in a lot of parks where that permit doesn't even apply. So I was technically paid for a permit that I never used and shot everything unpermitted in parks where I could have been shot down, but wasn't.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a fun challenge. It was cool to have the city just be a free, like a free set of extras that I didn't need to direct and coordinate. Like I could have coordinated all these people, you know, walking by at the right moments and had a car driving up. I've had people ask me about the one shot. There's this one long shot of a conversation walking down the street, which is one of my favorite shots, and which took 19 takes of a 30-second shot, which was tough. And people ask me, "Oh, was that court? Like, was did you have that car pull up at that moment? Did you have the light change?" I'm like, "No, that was just take 19, and everything fell into place. You know, and we used it, which is much better than doing 19 takes and using take 3."
Yeah,
it's nice to use take 19.
It was worth all the time.
Yeah.
So you had a good experience with like directing and acting.
Yes.
You think you're gonna? Are you interested in doing that kind of thing again?
Yeah, I'm gonna keep doing it. I think I like directing, but I don't really want to direct stuff that I didn't write.
Sure.
For sure. I'm totally cool not acting and stuff because I want to find the best person for every role, and I'm not going to be the best person for every role.
You were definitely the best person for this role.
Yeah. I at least can say fair for different reasons. But so I want to keep directing. I want to keep writing. I want to keep acting. Not necessarily all at the same time. I want to act in other people's stuff. I want to direct my own writing, and I want to sometimes act in the stuff that I direct, but not always.
That's a great distillation.
Yeah.
And as we begin to wrap this up, I have one more question for you. What lesson, if any, it can be technical, it can be emotional, it can be whatever, did you learn about yourself as an artist on this project that you know you're going to take with you onto your next one?
I think the main lesson that I took away is that I can do more than I think I can. I think that I have my impulse when I'm is to say, you're not gonna be able to do this. It's gonna be a disaster. And yet at every juncture when I had that impulse and pushed through it, most of the time with the support of collaborators in the edit, I had a point where I was like, I cannot do this. And I had to push through alone in my room. And it took months, but it happened. Things always, when I pushed through, things always fell into place. So I think just having more confidence in the fact that if I have the impulse to do something, that then overcoming that counter impulse that says, nah, you can't, you're gonna mess up and everyone's gonna hate you. I think overcoming that, I'm not sure that I'll be able to immediately implement that in a way that will counteract, you know, I'm not like the best at positive self-talk always, but fingers crossed.
You're getting there.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Finally, what's next? Are you working on anything?
So right this second, I was supposed to finish it 3 days ago. Right this second, I am working on something. It's actually one of the projects that my cousin read and said, do something different. No, he liked it, but he said, you know, try something a little more grounded. It is, so I wrote it as an animated pilot. It is about so are you familiar with the show Seinfeld?
Yes, I sure am.
So it's like Seinfeld, but if instead of Seinfeld, it was Jesus Christ.
Right.
Yeah. So here's the idea, right? We're in ancient Jerusalem. You imagine Jesus like this holy religious guy, right? But he was actually a nebbishy Jewish guy who always dreamed of being a stand-up comic. Only stand-up comedy hadn't been invented yet. No one would even know what it was if they heard it. So when Jesus Christ gets up and does his stand-up in the marketplace, mm-hmm. everyone's like mind blown, but they all mistake it for the word of God because mm-hmm. they're like, I've never heard anything mm-hmm. like this before. So that was an animated pilot, which was okay. But I've been wanting to do a rewrite for 2 years. I've been wanting to do a rewrite and just rewrite it as a grounded, like super grounded, like almost a drama that's only funny because mm-hmm. of, you know. And then a week ago, I had someone reach out who's interested potentially in adapting it into a serialized podcast.
Mm.
Podcast for all you listeners. And I'm working on that rewrite, and then I'll have to actually formally pitch it to them, but...
Very cool.
Fingers crossed. I just bumped the table.
And where can people find you and keep up with your work?
Yeah. I can be found on Instagram at JROB_films. JROB Films. I can be found on the internet at JacobRoberts.org. I'm an organization.
That's pretty special.
I'm pretty special.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you so much for sitting and chatting with me.
Thank you.
This is really great. Thank you for listening. For more information on Nifty 2022 or upcoming events, the talented youth, and more emerging filmmakers, check out nifty.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter at NFFTY or on Instagram and TikTok at Nifty Film. For more podcasts from Party Fish Media, search Party Fish Media wherever you listen to podcasts or check out our website at partyfish.media.
Party Fish Media acknowledges that it operates and records on Indigenous Duwamish and Puget Sound Coast Salish land that is still home to the Duwamish tribe. This land is stolen in violation of the Point Elliott Treaty of 1855. We are committed to uplifting the name of these lands and community members from these nations who reside alongside us. For more information on this land, its people, or ways you can help, visit duwamishtribe.org or realrentduwamish.org.